What's up, Bikumer fans? While at the launch for the new Fox grip dampers, I pretty much had my brain melted by VP of Engineering Bill Brown as he explained their inner workings. So, naturally, I brought him on the show here to run through it all again. The level of fluid dynamics and engineering discussed here is still well above my pay grade, but I think we do a pretty good job of explaining how the new dampers are able to simultaneously offer more support and be more sensitive to small bumps. It's all about pressure balancing, and we go deep on it. If you've always run your suspension wide open so it's as comfortable as possible, you may want to listen in. The new grip dampers provide better, faster damping, so you have more control with less harshness, and they work phenomenally well. Get ready to geek out. Please welcome Bill Brown. Hey, Bill, welcome to the Bike Rumor Show.
Good to be here, Tyler. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. So fair warning, everyone. We are going to probably go pretty deep because Bill and I had a conversation at the launch for this stuff for, I don't know, an hour or so. And I feel like I got to the point where I understood the end result, but how you went from like concept to these new dampers is still, I have a lot of questions. So we're going to try and paint a visual, you know, picture, a mental picture for everyone with this one. But before we get too deep into that, Bill, what was your role in these new dampers? What's your title at Fox? And yeah, what do you do there?
VP of engineering for the bike division at Fox. I worked with the team during the entirety of these projects for these three dampers that we're introducing. Most of the time, I just tried to stay out of the way, make sure they had exactly what they needed to accomplish the goals of the project. You know, but I was involved in all the discussions, all the design reviews, ride testing. Yeah, it's a big team effort to bring a product like this to market, and I'm just really happy that I was part of the team that did it.
And do you set the parameters at the top level, and then you kind of like guide the engineers to achieve those, or are you hands on with the development, the R&D, the tweaking, tuning, testing as well?
I'm a little hands on. I wish I was much more hands on. That's what I love most about engineering, you know, a lot of my time is spent kind of making sure that we're heading towards satisfying the requirements for the project the way they were spelled out by the product management team, making sure that our team's got the resources they need to be successful. You know, a lot of logistics that we deal with, you know, getting supply chain ready and manufacturing ready to build. So yeah, a lot of choreography happens
at my level.
Yeah, and not so much hands-on, but I try to force myself into the lab every once in a while and get in people's way and get my hands on product as it's being developed.
Very cool. All right. So you guys have just launched three new dampers and all grip, and you have grip SL for the 32 and the 34 step cast or taper cast. I can never remember if it's step cast or taper cast. So apologies.
No worries.
On that one. The lightweight 34.
Yeah.
Okay. The lightweight 34 and the 32 models. For the standard 34, 36, and I think a version of the 38, you have the Grip X, right?
Correct. Yep.
And then for the 38 and 40, you have X2.
X2 is also available in the 36.
Ah, okay, cool. Yeah, I didn't know that.
A lot of crossover across the different chassis to support whatever your vision is for the bike that you're building.
Right on. Well, so nutshell version, like, because we did cover this in depth in the written articles on Bike Rumor, and I encourage everyone to check those out because there are cutaway views of the dampers that we're going to talk about. So a lot of the things that we're asking you to paint a mental image of, well, you'll actually be able to see them in that article as well. But for people who just want to listen, you know, what's kind of the nutshell version of the difference between the SL, the X, and the X2?
There's a few differences. The SL, the driving requirement for that damper was weight. You know, that's in our product that's tailored towards cross-country marathon racing. And, you know, that product is very weight sensitive. So we wanted to bring a new level of performance at a weight that we didn't have before. So we were very conscious of the weight of that Grip SL damper. And therefore, it's got some internals that are a little bit different that make it lighter. But don't sacrifice the performance of the damper. You might not have the full adjustability that you do on, for example, a Grip X2, but that performance is still there. That compression and rebound performance is still there. On Grip X, it's tailored towards a trail bike where you need to climb, or usually you climb for a long time on a trail bike, or you know, you're going out for some really long rides. So you still care about the weight of the bike that you're on, but you're also going out to find some pretty fun downhills. And so you really do want a damper that's going to perform really, really well and hold up over some really long descents. And so on the Grip X, we've got a damper with low speed compression and high speed compression, but the high speed compression also provides a bit of a firm mode as you get to the end of its range for those climbs that you do, and then low speed rebound.
Yeah, I think I want to just call that out for a second, because I think that's a really neat feature, and that's an entirely new feature for the grip dampers, for that, especially for the high speed thing. Is like with the new, the high speed knob is the outer ring on the top of your fork,
right,
which it has been. And but what's new with that is a little nub on it, not really a handle, but just some sort of visual indication of where it is as you're turning the stroke, so that you can kind of set it for how you want for normal riding and remember where it is. And then when you're climbing, you just fling it all the way clockwise, and it actually impacts, it basically closes off the low speed and acts sort of like a, you know, like a climbing mode, right? Like it kind of just makes the fork really, really firm. And then when you get to the top, you just turn that back to where the little nub was, instead of having to like count clicks when it was perfectly round, because there was no visual indicator of where you were in your adjustment range. And then you're ready to go downhill, and you never have to touch the low speed dial, so that once you get that set the way you like it, you kind of don't have to mess that up to turn your fork into a climbing fork, using air quotes there, which is pretty neat. But yeah, we'll talk about the internals in detail, because it's pretty neat how you accomplish that. But moving on to the X2.
Yeah, then the X2, that is our four-way adjustable damper. It's intended for your gravity, downhill racing, high and low speed compression at the top cap, and high and low speed rebound accessed at the bottom of the leg of the fork. It's the heaviest of the three dampers. Weight was not a driving requirement for that damper, although we didn't set out to design a super heavy damper. We just prioritized performance and adjustability over weight for that damper for the riding category that it's intended to serve.
And does it share the same high-speed compression damper or high-speed compression system at the top as the X with the kind of firm climbing mode, or is it just a normal range?
It does not have a firm climbing mode. Every click of high-speed compression is doing just that, adjusting your high-speed compression. When you go to the end of that travel with your high-speed compression knob, you're just, there's no firm mode there like there is on Grip X.
Right.
So it's more similar to the Grip 2 damper that it's replacing. There are similarities to the function of how the high-speed compression on Grip X and the high-speed compression on Grip X2 work. The fundamentals of how those two circuits work is very similar. The Grip X just has some extra parts inside of it to shut off the low speed when you go to that last detent with the Grip X knob.
Yeah, cool. So they really are three very unique dampers, damping cartridges within the forks.
They are, absolutely. Yeah. And when cool. You see them, it's obvious. The three dampers look different. They're different size. The internals are different, but all three share the same general architecture, which is a spring-backed IFP damper, and they all share a common philosophy of generating damping.
Cool.
Which we can, probably get into here in a few minutes.
Yeah, and I think people might be wondering, okay, well, what about the Fit 4? And the Grip SL replaces the Fit 4, correct?
Yeah, that's probably the best way to look at it.
Yeah.
The way
basically, the Fit 4 is gone now.
Yeah.
In the Fox damping cartridges lineup. And so after we talk about the new dampers, we'll jump back and talk about why you guys went away from the Fit 4, which the Fit 4, for people who aren't super familiar, was a bladder-based system using basically like when the oil compressed in and it would fill a bladder and swell it, and then the pressure from that would push it back through, acting as an IFP, whereas the grip dampers use a spring-backed IFP. And for people who really have no idea what I'm talking about, the short of it is an IFP is simply a loaded area where as you compress the fork and the oil fills in, the IFP pushes against that oil to help it go back out of the thing and back into circulation. It's super layman's term. Add to that what you want. But the point of it is to keep the oil sort of in pressure in the system so that there's no chance for air bubbles to form and cause other problems.
Yeah, that's right, Tyler. One thing I would add is, you know, as a damper is compressed, that shaft moves into the damper and it's displacing oil. That oil has to go somewhere. In a bladder, that bladder expands to accept that oil. And a damper with an IFP, that IFP moves up towards the top cap to accept that volume being displaced by the shaft.
Yeah, and with the ones you have now, there's just a coil spring and they're pushing back against that so that as the fork rebounds, it's just pushing the oil back the other way.
That's right.
Cool. All right. So we'll come back to the demise of the Fit4 damper toward the end here. But let's dive in if you're ready, because this is, I'm going to have fun, I think, with this. Okay. So the new dampers, the big buzzword that you guys used in the presentation and kept talking about was pressure balancing. So let's just start with that. Like, in a nutshell, what is pressure balancing and why does it matter when it comes to fork damping?
The damper works off of pressure. There's oil inside the damper and all the force being generated by that damper, whether it's in compression or rebound, is being generated by pressure, in the pressure of the oil. And so it's really important to have really good control over that pressure. As a damper begins to compress, pressure begins to increase. And as you move that shaft into the damper faster and faster, pressure increases more and more. The rate at which pressure increases and decreases is important. How high pressure gets inside of a damper is really important. And so having control over all of that is what we're talking about when we say pressure balancing. And the reason why balancing is part of the term is because pressure is being generated at multiple places inside of the damper simultaneously. You need to balance those pressures.
Let's give people the mental image here with the tube example, because it's going to be super important to understand those different places that the pressures are building. So if you imagine a tube, tube standing upright vertical, right? The top third is A, the middle third is B, the bottom third is C. So A is basically, A and B are divided by the base valve, which is essentially your compression circuits, high and low speed. And dividing B and C is the mid valve on the compression circuit, which turns into the rebound valve on the rebound when the fork is rebounding. So we're going to focus on compression for now, just to not confuse it. So basically you have the mid valve at the bottom and the base valve above it. And as the fork compresses, that mid valve is pushing up to squish B, to squish that middle section, and pushing the damping fluid through the base valve, which is the compression circuit, into that top portion A, right? And so
close,
but this is where it starts getting confusing, because that mid valve does way more than I thought it would have, right?
And this is why our conversation last week was like over an hour long. It gets complicated because there's multiple things happening simultaneously on every single compression stroke and every single rebound stroke. What's forcing oil through the base valve is the shaft, primarily. Technically, it is possible for the mid valve to force oil through the base valve as well, but primarily what's forcing oil through that base valve is the shaft being compressed into the damper.
And just so people can, the shaft is basically attached to that mid valve.
That's right.
So I think of the mid valve like, I'm imagining like sort of a plunger, right? And so as the shaft pushes it up, that plunger is pushing fluid up through. But the reality is that mid valve is porous. So there's oils going both ways. So it's really not so much that plunger is pushing the fluid up. It's as that shaft extends further into the tube of oil, it's displacing the oil, right? Like, because that shaft is now taking up space, and the oil that was there has to go somewhere. And so it's going up through the compression valve, the base valve, through the compression circuit. And what you guys do with the tuning of the compression circuit is essentially how you control high and low speed compression. But what was super interesting to me, and I won't say who, but I've talked to some other suspension brands since our conversation, because I wanted to understand what they were doing, right? Like how they dealt with this as well. And The one in particular was saying basically the mid valve is, it might as well be a sieve, right? Like this, the oil was, the balance was, this, the pressure was the same on both ends of that. And I think that's, correct me if I'm wrong, but with the older grip dampers, the pressure would stay the same on both sides of that mid valve, correct?
There was a pressure drop across that mid valve. Pressure was not the same in volume B and volume C.
Okay.
As you've described it, but it wasn't a significant pressure drop. It was pretty minimal.
Okay.
And that's one of the biggest changes that I think people are feeling when they ride these new dampers, is we actually are generating quite a bit of pressure drop across that mid valve now. And we're supporting that pressure drop with the pressure that we generate at the base valve. And that starts to get at the heart of pressure balancing, where you can go too far at the mid valve. Imagine the mid valve was clamped. It wouldn't even open.
Meaning basically it was a plunger.
Yeah.
You
would instantly pull a vacuum behind that mid valve in volume C, and it would push all of the oil in volume B through the base valve.
Okay. Why don't you want that? Like, why do you not want to just use oil movement through the base valve, compression valve, to control your compression damping? Assuming you could prevent a vacuum from happening below it in volume C.
The only way you'd prevent a vacuum from happening in volume C in a situation like that is if you had a twin tube and all the oil flowing through the base valve would then flow back to volume C. That's how a twin tube works.
Gotcha. Okay.
Well, I'm not really sure how else you would do it. That might be the best way you'd do it.
That makes sense. And so I'm guessing
the reason why you never want to pull a vacuum in volume C is because at some point your compression stroke's going to stop and you're going to go into a rebound stroke. And if you have a vacuum in volume C, you have no rebound damping until that vacuum returns to positive pressure.
Gotcha.
So you have no control over the motion of your mass until that vacuum disappears and returns to positive pressure.
I'm just guessing we don't use twin tube dampers in bicycle forks because it would just add a lot of weight, right? Like to have to basically do two tubes.
Yeah, weight is one consideration. Another consideration is the speed at which the shaft is moving. You know, forks, the shaft speed of a fork, how fast a fork compresses, is really incredible. You know, hundreds of inches per second. It's extremely fast. And fluid has a weight associated with it. 1 cc of fluid is about the same weight as 1 cc of aluminum. Fluid's not massless. It has weight associated with it. And so when you have to move fluid around at really high velocities, that fluid momentum becomes a factor in the damping force and the response time of the damper. And in a twin tube, you're moving a lot of fluid around.
Yeah, it makes sense. And quite a ways, right? On a long travel fork, that fluid's moving quite a ways.
Yeah. So it starts to have some limitations.
Okay.
Now, on the rear end of the bike, you've got your motion ratio. And so, you know, shocks don't move as quickly as forks do because of that motion ratio. They move about a third of the speed of the fork. So it still makes sense in a lot of applications for a rear shock, because the fluid momentum's lower.
Right. And much shorter stroke volume or stroke length distances too. Yeah. Okay. So going back to the pressure differential between volumes B and C, so why does pressure balancing come in? Why did you guys decide to optimize around decreasing the pressure in volume C versus volume B for the new dampers?
Generating force at the mid valve instead of the base valve allows the damper to respond quicker. And that was one of the goals we wanted to achieve out of these dampers, was a quicker response time.
How so? Like, explain that.
The mid valve, I think earlier I mentioned that, you know, the damper works off of pressure to generate force. And the way it generates force off of pressure is that pressure is applied to an area. And the mid valve, the larger that area is, the lower the pressure needs to be to generate a certain amount of force. The mid valve is the largest area inside of the damper. So the more damping force you can generate at the mid valve, the lower the pressure delta needs to be. And the lower the pressure delta needs to be, the quicker you can respond to an input. So, but there's always limits to things, right? You can't take things to infinity. There's a limit to how much damping you want to generate at the mid valve versus the base valve. And one thing that defines that limit is how much pressure drop across the mid valve you can tolerate. And it's a balance. You have to, we've arrived at a certain ratio of damping between the mid valve and the base valve. And we've arrived there primarily through a ton of field testing.
And new equipment, right? Like, I think this was the first ones where you guys actually had internal pressure sensors that you could see what was happening inside the fork, right?
We had internal pressure sensors that were faster at measuring data than what we had been using, you know, in the past. I can't remember if we talked about it much when we were together in person, but, you know, a compression stroke and a rebound stroke, they only last about 30 milliseconds. You know, it's a very quick, on average, they last about 30 milliseconds each. So you're not giving the system a lot of time to respond to an input. And as riders, the human body's amazing. It can sense small changes really quickly. You know, 3, 4, 5 milliseconds, you know, human body can sense that. So when a rider comes down after a run and says, I feel like I was losing traction a little bit, or it felt a little harsh, or it was kind of pushing me back a little bit instead of I wasn't able to keep the front end weighted, you know, they're picking up moments in time that are only milliseconds long when they're experiencing things. And so we needed measurement equipment that was orders of magnitude faster than that, so that we could understand what was happening in those milliseconds. So we did spend a lot of time in the lab to try to quantify all the feedback we were getting from our field testing. And it was a big lift for our team. You know, I talked earlier about it, you know, it's a huge team effort to bring multiple dampers like these to market. And, you know, we had, you know, over a dozen people working a couple of years, some really long hours to do it. And that's where a lot of the, I don't want to use the word magic, but that's where a lot of the magic on these three dampers comes from, is just kind of going back to first principles and some really solid engineering and applying new resources to problems we've been studying for a long time.
Yeah. So what I'll talk about like my impressions of it in a little bit, but I want to hear from you first. Like where does this primarily affect? Is it more of a low speed thing or a high speed thing, or is it an equal balance between the two?
That's a good question.
While you're thinking about that, all right, so this is, I'm going to see if I can kind of put what you said into layman's terms, and correct me if I'm wrong, please. The way I understand how this new systems work is before the pressure balance was even, because it's much easier, right? So before, the pressure between B and C would remain pretty much even as the fork compressed. Now, that mid valve now actually has a little bit of extra damping in it, so that as B compresses, C is becoming slightly less pressurized than B. C is becoming slightly less pressurized than B. And so the way I interpret that is that instead of forcing the base valve between A and B to do all of the work, now that mid valve is doing a little bit of the compression work. And for reasons beyond my understanding, it's able to do that quicker and more easily than if you were trying to send it all through the base valve. And therefore, the fork can react more quickly while the base valve is getting ready to do what it does.
That's correct.
Okay. And then, so because of all that, because of this extra tuning, you can't just add mid valve damping and then leave the base valve the same as it was. So you guys had to redesign the base valve with, I think now the base valve is able to flow much more oil more easily and quickly through it, correct?
The base piston can flow a lot of oil through it. And when we add valves to that base piston, you know, we're creating a restriction.
All right. What's the base piston? Where does this come into play?
The base piston is it's part of the base valve assembly.
Okay.
When you say base valve, there's a piston, there's a low speed orifice bleed, and there's a stack of valves on top of the piston. Those things together is the base valve.
And when you say valves, it's shim stacks,
shims,
right? Yep. Yeah. Okay. Yep,
metal, so round metal shims.
Yeah, and I think in most situations is use ports, holes,
yep.
orifices,
yep.
you know, pick your word, for low speed, and basically controlling the size or, yeah, controlling the size, whether you're doing it through restrictions or just like closing off part of that hole, is how you control low speed. And then the high speed is typically shims that are covering ports. And as you hit something big enough, the oil is forced going through more forcefully and can bend those shims. And the harder it flows through, the more shims it bends, because it's a stack, usually in a conical shape.
Yep.
So that's where. So orifice is low speed, the shims are high speed, and there's a valve in there somewhere.
There's a bunch of valves in there.
Yeah. Okay. So what's new about the base valve on the new grip dampers versus the old, and how do the new mid valve and the base valve play together now?
The base valve's larger diameter, and it's a 2-port piston. The larger diameter not only allows the piston to have larger ports and flow more oil, it also allows us, actually more importantly, to use larger diameter shims. And with those larger diameter shims, it gives us more control over the pressure drop that occurs across the base valve. And that control is needed to balance out the damping happening at the mid valve to make sure that the pressure in volume C never gets close or drops below zero.
Cool. And the shims too, I think one of your counterparts there who does a lot of the tuning with the athletes was like, the old base valve had, I think, like 8 shims, and the new one has like 23. So there's a lot more potential for customizing and fine tuning for people who want to take it to that next level as well.
Yeah, absolutely. That was one of the first inputs we got from our product performance team that's responsible for tuning our dampers. They needed more room. They needed more room for more valves to have better control over the pressure inside of the damper and in volumes B and C.
Right. So then going back to the question that you're going to think about is like adding that mid valve compression in there, like, is that more of a high speed thing or a low speed thing or equal parts?
That mid valve is influencing the entire speed range of the damper. It's not a linear function though with velocity. And that's where things start to get really tricky, is you've got multiple nonlinear effects happening. And what you want them to sum together to create a linear response from the damper.
Right.
And that's where things start getting really complicated with how parts are designed, the size of ports, the configuration of the valve stacks, you know, things like that. You're trying to control pressure buildup in the damper and create a linear response to velocity when all the oil wants to do is react exponentially.
Good times. Well, I think what stuck in my mind about our first conversation was that after we had been talking for like 45 minutes, and I think I'd get in, you'd say something else, and I'd have to go back and like back 3 steps. So we'd get slightly ahead and then go back 3 steps. What you said was that, like, don't worry, Tyler, because when we bring on new engineers here, we have to explain it to them 3 times. and then it still takes them like months to actually really learn it. So for anybody listening who is completely lost, like, don't feel bad, because
I remember joining Fox and it was a steep learning curve.
Yeah, it's nuts.
There's a lot of really interesting physics happening inside of the products that we all love and enjoy riding on our bikes. It's never boring.
No. I mean, to me, it's literally every year things get better, and I don't know how, because every year I'm like, oh, this is so great. And, you know, how is it ever going to get better? And somehow it does. So you're right. Never boring. So for somebody that's like interested in this, that wants to pursue something else as a career, right? Like, is this fluid dynamics? Is this mechanical engineering? Like, what do you even begin to study to start putting this together?
Mechanical engineering.
Okay. And does that cover the fluids? Because clearly there are fluid things in here.
There's fluid dynamics courses in mechanical engineering. Having said that, we've got a host of degrees on our team. We're not all mechanical engineers. So it's, going to school, it's good to get exposure to, if you're interested in suspension, it's definitely good to get exposure to fluid dynamics, thermodynamics, strength of materials, courses like that.
Yeah. You probably have a couple of electrical engineers in there somewhere.
We have some double E's. Yeah.
Yeah.
We even get along. Believe that. Us mechanicals Excellent. And electrical engineers, we even get along.
All right. Cool. Okay. So let's real quick, let's touch on the rest of the hardware. So there's not, it's not just a new damper, although what I love hearing every year from you guys for quite some time now, and the same for some of your competitors, is that the chassis is the same. The uppers and the lowers are the same, which means this stuff, these new dampers are backwards compatible.
Yep.
So, right. So back until whatever current model chassis.
Model year 21 in most cases, but I can follow up with you and see.
Yeah. We'll make sure this is in the article.
Yeah.
Cool. But yeah, so at least for a few years, somebody could upgrade to these new dampers.
Yep.
And the one change internally though, which should be a service parts kit, although no, maybe not. Okay. So let's talk about the bushings.
Yeah.
There are new bushings I'll just let you explain it. What's new about the bushings?
So the forks have four bushings in them, two in each leg. There's an upper bushing near the lower leg seal and then a lower bushing that's, about 4 or 5 inches below that. That lower bushing, we've always had grooves cut into the liner of that bushing, and those grooves were there to promote movement of oil inside the fork to keep the upper bushing and lower leg seal lubricated. We took those grooves out. We took them out because we've got channels cast into the lower legs now, and those channels provide a passageway behind the bushing to allow oil to migrate upward in the fork to keep the upper bushing and the lower leg seal lubricated. So we saw a small reduction in friction by removing those grooves. And so we took advantage of it.
Cool. So is it a 2024 or 25 model year lower casting that has those grooves, or how far back do those grooves go?
Removal of those grooves is new for model year 25, but
okay.
The bushings are identical in form factor to what we've always used. So, they can be, at a service center swapped out.
You wouldn't want to put the new solid bushings into the older forks because there'd be no path for oil to get up to the upper bushing, correct?
Wouldn't be ideal.
Okay. All right. So the new bushings are not necessarily backward compatible, not ideally backward compatible, but the dampers are, which is awesome.
Yeah.
All right. So let's talk about Fit 4 real quick. Okay. And then, let's finish on that, because while we're still talking about the dampers. So my experience test riding these was that historically, I like my forks wide open. I want them to be as soft and squishy and big fat Cadillac as possible, right? Like just soak up everything and super comfortable. So I would typically run high speed and low speed, if not all the way open, like maybe a click or two in, just depending. With this new one, I rode the Grip X on a 36, and I had the compression damping, the high speed compression set all the way up until it starts to get into the where it starts to affect the low speed.
Yep.
So it was, halfway in, which I would never do. And the fork felt incredible. And, to explain that further, right? Like it felt as soft and traction-y and just supple as I wanted. But the support was incredible. Like when I hit like really big sections of repeated rocks and roots or bigger drops or stuff, I wasn't just like blowing through my travel and felt like I had to slow down a little to maintain control. Instead, it felt like it was able to hold me where I needed to be held and still soak up all the bumps. And I felt like I had a lot more control in the really technical stuff. It was really, really impressive.
That's awesome.
Yeah. It's not really a question, but like, it's kind of the point, right? Was to handle a lot of stuff at once and just recover faster.
Yes. Your feedback on how you have historically ridden a damper is feedback we hear all the time. I ride my dampers wide open. I don't use the high speed, low speed compression adjuster. I just run it wide open because that's where it's most comfortable. And what we wanted to do with these dampers is, and so when you do that, you're relying a lot on the air spring for not only support, but for positional support, but also velocity support. You're relying a lot on the air spring. What we wanted to do was try to put more control and have more velocity sensitive control to the fork. And that's what the damper, when done right, allows us to do. We can provide more velocity sensitive force instead of position sensitive force. So we're actually generating a lot more damping out of these dampers in compression than the ones we're replacing with them. And yet they don't feel harsh, or in some cases they feel even more comfortable. And I think one reason for that, and I mentioned earlier how amazing the human body is, it's really good at picking up differences. You know, I could ask you to hold a 2-pound weight in your hand but not tell you how much it weighs, and ask you to guess how much it weighs. And you might get close, you might say 2.5 pounds, but I could put a 2-pound weight in your left hand and a 2.1-pound weight in your right hand, and you could tell me which one was heavier. Like, the human body is really good at telling differences, changes, which is what acceleration is. Acceleration is a change in velocity, and the human body is really good at picking up accelerations. So by having a velocity-sensitive force, more velocity-sensitive force in the fork, we're able to better control accelerations happening in the fork, which is why I think you perceive the fork being less harsh.
Yeah.
It's catching the motion quicker in the stroke, which means the damper working with the air spring has more stroke to work across to slow it down and stop it. You're not blowing through the first part of the stroke, waiting for the damper to respond. And again, when I say this, I'm still talking milliseconds. It's happening really quick, but you're not blowing through a part of the stroke, waiting for the damper to respond. And by the time you do, you're deep into the air spring and you're hitting a wall of force from the air spring.
Yeah.
Right. So it's providing more controlled velocity dependent force that has an influence on the accelerations happening to the fork, and you perceive it as less harsh, even though you're getting more support.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that's a good way to put it, because it makes me think that, you know, before I'm compensating for the, I'm saying lag time, right? We're still talking milliseconds, right? The lag time for the damping to do what should be doing. And because I've felt that really minuscule lag, I would just open it wide up because I don't want to feel that damping, mm-hmm. you know, that sort of like a ramp in damping, so to speak. Again, air quotes here, because we really are talking about super quick, but it's amazing that you change something that changes the ability for the fork to control something in a few milliseconds, and it's that noticeable. I mean, it was literally like, these were incredible forks. Like, I highly recommend somebody go test ride one if you're a Fox fan.
It's one of the most enjoyable things I've worked on over the last couple of years, watching these dampers come to life and the learnings that the team have had, and just getting reactions from people riding them for the first time.
Yeah.
Cool. We've made some discoveries that were not intuitive. And you know, collectively they've led us down this path, and we're really happy.
Yeah, I know you don't want to talk about future products, or at least your marketing team would be really upset if you did. But there was some mention in the presentation about how, like, this is sort of just the beginning, that now you're looking at, you know, like, okay, well, we solved what we could find for, like, you know, 1 or 2 milliseconds, but now, like, what are we going to figure out when we can measure, you know, a fraction of a millisecond? And, like, where do you see this going? Like, how much better could it get, in your opinion?
It can get better. I we're always working a couple of years ahead. So I'm excited for what the future holds, as excited as I am about these dampers now.
All right. That's now I'm excited. Very cool. All right. So let's go to Fit 4. So why get rid of a bladder-based design and eradicate Fit 4 from the lineup?
We didn't set out to eradicate Fit 4. You know, that bladder-based system has been a great damper architecture for us for many years. I think we first came out with that type of architecture in 2010, I think. It's been a great, reliable damper. We were after more performance, though. And one of the shortcomings, maybe the only shortcomings of that architecture, is there's nowhere for oil to go if the damper ingests it. And so you have to prevent the damper from ingesting oil, you need a really good seal package on the shaft. And usually the better something seals, the higher the friction is. And we're not talking huge amounts of friction, but the shaft seal on the Fit 4 damper is a little bit higher friction than what it is.
When you say damper, you want to keep oil from getting into the IFP?
You
want
to keep oil from getting into the damper. It's really hard to seal things perfectly in a dynamic situation. You know, you can seal things really well statically, but you know, when you have you know, linear reciprocating motion, it's not easy to seal things and keep things in or keep things out. And so to keep bath oil out of a damper, you need one of two approaches. You either need a really good seal on the shaft to keep bath oil out, which is the approach on Fit 4, or you need to not care if you ingest it. And that's actually the approach on all of our grip dampers. Our grip dampers, they will ingest some bath oil.
And bath oil, explain that. Is that just the stuff that slosh around the lowers to keep the seals and everything
lubricated,
or the bushings lubricated?
Okay. It's the oil inside of the lower legs that is free to slosh around inside of the fork and keep everything lubricated.
Okay.
As that oil gets into a grip damper, the grip damper is able to expel it back into the bath.
And that's all happening up through the spring back to IFP, right?
Exactly. Okay. Yep. There's a small hole. There's a small hole in the pressure tube above the IFP, and there's a teardropped feature on the shaft the IFP rides on. And as the IFP gets to that teardrop feature, if there's excess oil, it expels it through that teardrop and then out the hole in the pressure tube, and then it just drains back into the bath of the fork. So with that type of architecture, we can run a really low friction seal on our grip dampers, because it's okay if the damper ingests a little bit of oil. It doesn't have to be a perfect seal. It just has to not leak oil out, which it does a great job of not leaking oil out, because it's a U-cup design. So the pressure energizes it. So we were going for ultimate performance, which means we also had to address friction in the damper. And we weren't confident we could achieve the durability and the low friction out of a Fit 4 that we can achieve on the grip type architecture.
So do you use the same oil inside the damping cartridge as what's in the bath?
We do, yes.
Okay. So it doesn't matter if they mix.
That's right.
Do you potentially have to change the oil more often? Because, you know, I would think the bath oil is more likely to get contaminated with stuff because it's coming in and out of the sliders, you know.
It does. The bath oil does get contaminated, although our seals do a really good job of keeping contamination out. And any contamination that does make it past the seal, there's a foam ring underneath that seal that also does a really good job of capturing that contamination before it gets into the bushings or into the bath.
And we're talking about the seals at the top of the fork lowers, between the stanchions and the
lowers. Thanks for clarifying, Tyler. Yeah. We're talking about a lot of seals at the moment. So the lower leg seals are the ones I'm talking about right now.
Yeah, cool. Right on. Well, yeah, those were all my questions. Like, is there something I didn't ask that like you're just super excited to talk about these new dampers?
I got cutaways here. I could talk for a couple more hours about all the, well, not all the stuff we did, but some of the stuff we did. it's been an amazing project to be a part of. I'm really proud of the work the team's done, and the outcome. I got into this stuff because I'm a huge cycling fan and I love to ride my mountain bike. And to be able to go out on a ride and experience a new level of performance coming from my bike, it just brings a smile to my face. And I couldn't imagine doing anything else with my career.
Awesome. Well, good. It's glad to hear. Thank you. I appreciate the time and the explanation. And for people who want to kind of see what we were talking about, check out the post on Bike Rumor about the new grip dampers. And yeah, Bill, appreciate it.
Great, Tyler. Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
If you like this episode and have a product or tech you're curious about, head over to bikerumor.com/podcast and fill in the form to submit your idea. You'll also find links and photos for this episode there, plus a link to this and every other episode we've ever recorded. If you really like this and want more, hit subscribe on your favorite podcast player and leave us a rating and review. That's the grease that keeps our wheels spinning over here in podcast land, and it helps us keep getting amazing guests for you. You can find us on social. We're at Bike Rumor on all the things. And if you like random entrepreneurship, NFT, Web3, cycling stuff, you'll find me at Tyler Benedict on all the social channels. Thanks for listening. Until next time, keep the rubber side down.